Welcome to Sustainably Speaking. I'm your host, Allison Tomas, and today I am lucky to have Imani Warren as my guest. Now, I just wanted to start off with a simple question, that being, what is your major and minor?
My major is environmental policy, and I have two minors that are in Spanish and English.
Okay. Do you want to, expand on, what that entails?
And, yes.
If you've had experience and whatnot in that.
Yes, I would love to. So I'll start with the smaller ones, which are Spanish and English. Spanish, I had a Spanish-speaking partner for about a year and a half. We lived together. So I spoke Spanish at home, and I spoke Spanish in Chicago whenever I came here, but I started learning Spanish when I was around 16 in high school and became a passion, especially to learn Spanish from Mexico because of how many Mexican immigrants are here in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it's very important to understand the Chicano culture, and I definitely found that here. That's for Spanish. And for English, I'm a poet, naturally. I'm actually a poet. I write poems all the time. I just wrote a book. I would love to show it to you after.
Please.
It's very cool. It's called I Love You More. But I've been writing books. I've been writing poems. I've been writing stories. I am a writer at heart. That's really something I never have to be trained in. I am just a writer. I love words. I'm wordphilic. I'm a word lover, you know?
Yes.
And environmental policy is one of those things that you learn because you're taught it. And the more you're taught it, the better you get at it. So I'm a great scientist at this point because I started officially being labeled a scientist when I was 16, 17. And this AP environmental science class completely changed the way I viewed the world. I viewed the world in a way that was more active and changing and transient and beautiful, passionate. I viewed the world in a way that I was able to actually see and fully actualize. You know what I mean? When you're able to see those statistics and those people, it helps you realize that you're real and people are too.
Yes.
It started to put my problems named. It was it became that every single problem I was experiencing was environmental.
Yes.
Like I said, I live next to an airport. Mm-hmm. I live next to a dump. I live next to a highway. I live next to a radioactive site in St. Louis, Missouri, Bridgeton. Mm. Look it up. It's crazy there. But that experience being... experiencing environmental racism directly informed the way that I interact with environmental policy now.
Yeah.
And it made it so it was not a choice. It was a must to study the environment and get as much information as I could about it so I could go back home and figure things out.
Yeah. No, 100%. That's always around everywhere.
Yeah,
it's literally everywhere.
It is. And, even they have these places called, have you heard of a sacrifice zone?
No.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Are you serious?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a zone in any part of America that we sacrifice the zone in order to have. So, for example, by O'Hare, that's considered a small sacrifice zone because you're putting the airport there for sacrifice for everybody else within the city.
Oh.
Where I live was a sacrifice zone because there was a dump, there was an airplane, it was just so much different, and it was a sacrifice. But sometimes it can get even worse. Like in Mississippi, Alabama, they have many more sacrifice zones that are sacrifice zones for not only Mississippi, but for America, and even sometimes the whole world. There's a floating thing of trash.
It's two times the size of
Texas. That's a perfect example of a sacrifice zone.
I want to know how that came to be. Why were people genuinely thinking this is a good idea? Let's just kind of sacrifice a place of an area.
Well, it was really, it's easy to understand what set the stage for that, which it goes all the way back to FDR in the late 30s, early 40s, when he was reconstructing America with his New Deal. And his New Deal basically gave room for FHA loans, which are federal housing loans, so that you can build houses in places. So they would give loans to green areas and sometimes blue areas, but not give loans to red areas, which created what we now know as redlining. And so because of redlining, it set the stage for areas where people of color were there in pockets, which set the stage for sacrifice zones. That's how we know where to put the sacrifice zones, basically.
That's actually stupid.
That is
the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah, but for a lot of people, for a good portion of America, it's what they feel they have to do to keep their sanctity, their happiness of life.
I wonder if there's a way to restore those areas. Are we actually gonna work towards that, or are we just, do you know of any plans that will actually restore that?
And this it's bringing so much history, but this goes back to 1969, or it was around 1969. It's called the Cuyahoga River Fire.
Okay.
So basically the practice was, before the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, the practice was when you had waste was to just put it where you're not. Put it in the lake, put it in the air. Okay, we didn't have regulations to stop that until the early 70s, the late 60s. Okay, so what were they doing before then? There was so much industrialization between the 20s, you know, the 1920s and then the 1960s. So what they would do is they would have rivers. They would pour oil and just things they didn't need into the rivers. The Cuyahoga River was one of the rivers that actually just combusted and caught on fire by itself. It was really a big portion of why people felt so inclined to change the Clean Water Act or to enact the Clean Water Act and enact the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, because it literally caught on fucking fire. Like, it caught on fire. It just caught on fire. And so, you know, they restored that by putting in rules and regulations so that you can't just dump things there.
Yes, that's probably, like, the best course of action. Like, I mean,
you know, that's the best course of action, right? But it's not strict enough. We can get into that if you want, but it's just not.
Please, can we? Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into it, please.
It's not strict enough because I just said 1969, girl.
Yeah.
It's 2024.
Yeah.
We have not had as many drastic changes as we did in the 60s.
No, and not
things
one
are
bit.
Much worse. Things are much worse. And when I say these drastic changes, I mean policy. So there's this term called entrenchment, which is basically when a policy is taken in by the people who are supposed to enact the policy. Instead of doing that, they just kind of let it go under. They don't actually do what they're supposed to, or they just reenact, like they take it away.
Sweep it under the
rug. Right. So Donald Trump, he ended up entrenching about 112 policies that were environmental policies while he was in office. Some of these were so basic, things that you would think, why would you want that to be? And like, that seems like it would benefit everyone, right? No, and I think a lot of times people think that this is like an issue that is party versus party, Republicans versus Democrat.
Yeah.
When the EPA was made, it was made under a Republican president. He enacted the most environmental laws ever. He was a Republican. When we had some of the first clean energy laws in Texas, they were made by Republicans in 2006. Yeah. So you know what I mean? It's like, it's these things that it seems like not bipartisan, but it really is, and it's only recently become something that is a party issue.
Yeah.
Before, like, 2015, we all wanted a clean earth, Republican or not. You know, some people may even argue before 2007, and we can talk about that, too, but, you know, if anybody want to argue with me, but I would say, you know, before 2015 was when we made the Paris Accord.
Yeah.
And we actually left the Paris Accord, I think, in 2016 or 2017.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, when Trump came into office. And then that's when he retrenched about 112 those environmental policies. So now the Biden administration is trying to reenact a bunch of policies, enact new policies, and we'll see what Kamala Harris ends up doing with her environmental plan. But, you know, some people say it's promising. Some people say it's not.
It, honestly, that depends. Like, the whole thing with, like, the politics and whatnot. Like,
Yeah, but when you're looking at environmental issues, you have to be, and this is something that I realized over time, and I only learned it this couple past semesters in school. I came into school thinking, I don't need to be a politician. I don't want to be a politician.
Yeah.
Politicians are crooked, okay? Politicians, I don't like them. I don't want them. They're morally wrong. So are presidents. Mm-hmm. But we still have them.
Yes.
You know? Yes. Somebody will be senator. Somebody will be the congresswoman. Somebody will be the councilwoman. Why can't it be me? And
oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, right? And I just thought, I really thought, I don't want to be a fucking politician. But I'm like, why not? Like, you know, other than the moral implications of it literally ruining my morality, you know what I mean? Because I don't want to do it. I still am putting myself on the line for all these people that I would hopefully be protecting if I'm doing things right. That also gets into the thing of, would you rather be in a system that's bad or destroy the system and make a new one? You know, this is the thing that I'm constantly battling with, these environmental issues. Do I just want to say F the system, or do I want to create more implementations to make the system better? And it's not even about if I can. It's about if I should.
Yeah.
You know, if I ran, I feel like maybe I could. You know, it's not out of the box.
Yeah.
Should I? What are the moral implications? The point of that whole thing is that America is facing these big, big, big monumental moments right now. So we had it's this thing called the United Nations.
Yes.
We had this meeting in Rio in 1992, and it was basically one of the first meetings where we ever discussed sustainability as a nation.
Wow.
They came up with 17 different sustainability measurements, and they came up with the goals that they would have by 2030. We are nowhere near those goals.
That's awesome. I'm so worried about that.
I'm so pumped. Like,
this is great. Nice job.
We're nowhere near those goals. So they remade it, and they're trying to do it for 2050, but I don't know if we'll be there. You know, they just keep pushing it back.
Doomsday clock is kind of ticking, guys.
Oh, my God.
It is ticking. Yeah, it is.
But we're laughing about it because that's really all we can do, and I hate that that's kind of the solution is humor. to get through this, like, this true pain of understanding reality. But, you know, I even talk to people about being in the major itself. Like, being an environmental policy major is a lot of balancing. You have to balance the doom, which is there, okay, we're burning, with the hope, which is that things have to change if we want to continue to sustain this life.
So. Yes, that's exactly the sole reason of this podcast.
Right.
Because it was my Modern Global Issues class, sophomore year. And we watched a documentary called, like, Before the Flood.
Oh, my God.
But it was the best. Not okay, that's, like,
no,
I'm
say
really
what,
like,
but say what
was,
you
but,
say.
It, but it was one of the best, like, documentaries I've seen, because not only did it, like, explain and explore all the environmental issues that were going on all over the earth, because they were so, like, versatile, they're so different, it also kind of touched upon, like, how can we actually
change
solve them?
Yeah.
How can we change? And so that's kind of inspired this podcast, was just like, okay, let's talk about what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But how can we actually solve these things?
Oh,
what's going on? And how can we actually, like, I'm not saying, because even when I pose this to people, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have my podcast be about, you know, how do we solve it? They're like, you can't just solve, you know, world hunger. And, like, when I know. I'm trying to do it, like, just, you know, like little baby steps, guys. Just let's brainstorm here. Because it's not talked about enough.
No.
Or sometimes it's just talked about and not, like,
action.
Yeah, there's no action.
And this is something I'd love for you to take with you is the term. It's called actionable change.
Yes.
Change where you can really see what you're doing and that it's creating change.
Yep.
And for me, what I just took from what you just said, the biggest part is that you were fucking 15, 16 years old, literally trying to change the world in your head based off of one documentary.
Yeah.
And that's the power of media.
Yes.
You could be inspiring the next you.
And that's like, I would love that.
For you to be, like, a communications major but have so much interest in environmental work and stuff, that's almost the opposite of me. You know, I am an environmental major, but I have a special interest in communication.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see how we continue to compliment each other throughout the conversation, because that's definitely a compliment that I'm understanding right now, is that you were intensely inspired as a kid. You were a child.
Yes.
Okay, and now you're an adult and you're doing what you wanted to do.
Which is, like, actually insanely shocking, because I didn't think
I'd be able to do this.
It's
actionable change.
Yes,
isn't that so fun? And I, you know,
I
say to all the naysayers who say you can't change one thing in one day, but I could change it in 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
I could change it in 30 days. I could make 30 episodes, okay, and have those be over a year or 2 years or 3 years, and I could still make some change. I can make some change. You know, I had a podcast for 3 years where I just brought people on. We talked about their identity.
Yeah.
We talked about who they were. That created so much change in conversations and the way people thought about themselves when they left, who they talked to. That created so much change.
Yes.
And it was nothing but talking. Okay, so talking matters. You know, also a beautiful part about a first episode is that you're really introducing and priming for the rest of the series, which is going to be this. It's going to be having difficult conversations with people about really, really pithy and difficult topics.
Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I am the worst person when it comes to science,
mm-hmm.
which was so shocking to me that I like found so much interest in, especially environmental science. I was like, oh my God.
It just matters. It's the fire.
Yes, yes. So that's why I wanted, like, I'm good with the communications part,
and
I'm trying to do better on the science-y part.
So you're like, let me have somebody help me.
Exactly.
Completely.
Let me have somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's you.
Hey.
And then, like, just, like, give me information. Give it, whoever's listening, information. Because I want people who actually, like, care to listen about it. Like, actually are like, wow, like, I actually feel motivated with this. Where I can actually, like, listen to what's going on.
And you're also just thinking to yourself, how can I just... It's really about knowing who you are, knowing what you do and don't have. And you know that you don't have the facts that you want. So, you know, continue to bring those people on. And I'm glad that you feel as if I have facts. Because
you
for me,
do.
Like, I guess I always consider myself like an environmental savant. I knew what was going on, but I'm not like an expert. But I've been learning about the environment for 4 years in college very intensely. And now I'm learning about policy, and I'm really active. And, like, I definitely feel very confident to talk about the issues that are kind of going on. And it's interesting how you say, you know, you don't know a lot about science, but I haven't really said too much science to you. I've just said history, which is interesting because that completely informs the science.
And I know you were mentioning, like, some policies and whatnot, and, like, I did find, like, a little, like, an article, I guess.
Cool.
It was basically about energy bills possibly lowering soon.
They are.
Due
they
to
are.
Pushes for better sustainable energy.
Oh, I know about this.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yes, I do. I'm glad you brought it up. I don't even have to prepare. Like, so I'll start telling you about this case study in Iowa.
Ooh.
So in Iowa, they had a flood. I think the flood might have been in 2016. Yep.
I don't know how you know these dates, bro.
You go to class. You go to class. You listen. And also, it creates context because when the flood happened, they were experiencing a bunch of different laws by Donald Trump that were taking away their rights. So I know that it was between 2016 and 2017.
Okay.
There's certain context clues. But anyway, so it was around this time. Iowa experienced a really big flood, and they lost energy. They lost power. They had just experienced a flood, like, a little bit before that, maybe 2014, very recently before that. And so they were really thinking to themselves, what are we going to do? How are we going to create sustainable change? Wind farms.
Mm-hmm.
Wind energy. So Iowa has some of the best wind energy scholastic programs, like collegiate programs, in the nation. And you wouldn't even know it because it's freaking Iowa.
Like, it's Iowa, bro.
But they do, and it's great. Like, the documentary I watched showed, like, a little, you know, and this is just to kind of give image of the new image of wind and the new wind image of energy, but, like, a little blonde girl, you know, she's not big or tall or anything, but she's talking about how she wants to put in these big wind turbines, which, by the way, are, like, bigger
massive.
Than you could ever, yeah, you already know, they're bigger than you could ever fucking imagine, but she's trying to install them and fix them. Wind turbines actually expire every 15 to 20 years, so we're going to need that action now, and then in the next, you know, cycle of it, and then they're going to keep being built. So not only are we having people who are building windmills, we're having people who are repairing and maintaining windmills, and then we're having people who are doing technology to make them more efficient, we're having people to collect the energy, we're having people to send the energy, we're having people to monitor the energy.
New jobs.
It's creating new jobs, which is creating more affordability for the energy. Additionally, wind energy, while Donald Trump was a president, was not subsidized. Subsidized basically means that you get money from the government to do it.
Yes.
While you do it. And so wind energy wasn't subsidized. Wind energy is becoming subsidized. And in the future, more forms of energy, renewable energy, which is what we call clean energy, renewable energy, will begin to be subsidized. And we call, like, a coal and oil, that's like dirty energy.
Okay, so basically our energy bills are expected to lower. Honestly, would that even... Dare I even say, would that even lower inflation?
Probably not. It's hard to say the economic impact from one factor. So if you think about right now, we are living out the policies of Donald Trump.
Okay.
In 4 years, we will be living out the policies of Biden. 4 years ago, we were living out the policies of Obama. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we're living out the policies of the presidency before us. So I'm sure that we will start to experience inflation reducing. We already have since 2022. The Inflation Reduction Act actually was pretty effective, and it reduced inflation.
Oh.
It's very typical to think to yourself, inflation is high. Inflation is getting higher. It's higher than ever. Inflation is lowering. Inflation is becoming stagnant.
It's a good reminder.
Yeah, it's a good reminder to remember, actually, it's not going as bad as you think. In 2021 and 2022, we had high rates of inflation. Biden was able to put in the Inflation Reduction Act and other things that he did to lower inflation, along with sociality, things that he didn't control, ended up lowering inflation. So it's lower than it was in 2022, but it's still, inflation will always exist. And I think because inflation will always exist, it's always a thing that's good for fear mongering. Inflation. Well, inflation is going to happen no matter what, actually.
Yes.
It's just about the rate of inflation, how fast it's inflating, and how fast it's deflating or staying stagnant as well. So
exactly.
Good question. These are environmental issues that we cannot, I love this. These are environmental issues that we definitely cannot ignore, is the fact that it genuinely is getting harder to survive. Like 140 people died in Helene.
In Florida, they're, instead of looking, okay, adaptation versus mitigation. This
there
is my
we go.
favorite topics.
There we go.
Adaptation is what they're doing. They used to do in Florida, where they just decided to raise the streets.
Exactly. Build the houses on sticks.
Oh, we're flooding? Okay. Well, let's just
raise
it up, guys. No problem. More fish. No. And so, like, the mitigation is just, like, actually doing something for the long run, which is, like, well, why are we having so many of these floods right now?
How can we stop that?
And it's like, it's sad because, like, I'm looking, like, I'm getting emails from New York Times, like, hey, by the way, 20 people just died. I'm like, oh, that's nice. And it's so common now, unfortunately.
It is. 20 people isn't a lot to us. We got 300 million. It's not a lot to a small country. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago. To a small country like Trinidad, 20 would be a ton. It would be like, even when one person is like, oh, my God. Crime, but it's different for everywhere. And I'm actually in a class right now. It's global sustainability, and we're talking a lot about global sustainability, and we're looking at the social, economic, conceptualization, political factors as to why we are so behind on those sustainability goals I was telling you about. And I truly believe, and this is what I wrote, a big part of why we are behind is because of America, and let me tell you why. There's this protocol called the Kyoto Protocol. You got the agreements we made in Rio. You got the Paris Accord, okay? And there's many more agreements, environmental agreements we've made to try to create actionable change. This is the catch-22 that these policies experience. If America goes, other countries will go, okay? Other countries will go, and they'll participate. But if America goes, they will weaken the policies and make them so loose, because the policies are usually towards Americans, because we, you know. However, if America doesn't, then a lot of countries just won't participate. It'll be stronger, but it'll have less of an effect, because a lot of countries might not participate. It won't be taken seriously. What do we do? Do we include America and have looser regulations that they might not even, you know, ratify in the Senate? They won't even put it into law. Or do we have it so America isn't in there, but the restrictions are stronger, but people might not take it serious? This is why we're so behind our sustainability goals. It's not an international behind. It's because America is the leader and we are leading terribly.
Oh, yeah.
We're leading bad.
I feel like also, this is on a completely different tangent. I feel like because we have so many, like, locations elsewhere in other countries, it's like, if we're gonna have all these things in, like, all these other countries and be like, okay, well, then I'll support, you know, this country, I'll support this country, I'll put, like, my imports in this country, we're holding them back, and we're not letting them kind of become more developed 100%. As well.
It's a really, it gets into the political weeds of history and sovereignty, and it gets into some really complicated issues that are more than environmental, that I feel like I know a lot about, but I could always be more informed and have more information about it. But yeah, it's very pithy, very complicated.
We got the Ashaninka tribe.
Oh, the Ashaninka tribe.
Has restored a good chunk of the Amazon.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Which we were screwed with the Amazon. We were actually screwed. We were like, guys, it was starting to become a panic. Like the coral reef, too. Oh, my God, guys, we're going to.
The coral reef is gone. That shit is gone.
It's coming back.
Hey.
It's coming back. So that's like that's the good positives. Again, another reason why I want this podcast is there's the good positives. So we just talked about some heavy stuff. And now it's like, let's do like a 180 kind of. Mm-hmm. Let's like talk about like, okay, we have this. That's good. Here's some development. And then, you know.
And it's also the way in which they're coming back. You know, the coral reef, once coral dies, it can never come back. You know, coral's gone. And it's just, it's the allow for development without destroying. You know, the reason why the Ashaninka tribe is able to enact or recreate some of the beauty that they saw before was because they have the space and time to do so.
Yeah.
We were literally taking it from them by burning down the fucking Amazon. So that's great.
It's supposedly, it's reading here. Mm-hmm. I'm reading on dailyclimate.org. Perfect. Check it out. It was the Ashaninka people are using their successful reforestation and self-sufficiency model to help 12 indigenous territories across 1.6 million acres of the Amazon rainforest. So
that makes me smile. That feels really good to hear.
Oh my, so they're not only are they helping their own, you know, tribes and community, they're going to other like indigenous and even non-indigenous communities. Mm-hmm. And then this one quote, which I really love. It was one of the leaders. He goes, the culprits for this live far from us, but if we start pointing fingers, we'll waste a lot of energy and solve nothing. Instead, we're focusing on adaptation, which I feel like is a good approach. I really think it's a good approach.
It's the only approach. It's the perfect approach because it's the only approach.
Yeah.
Like I just said, you can't force America to do jack shit, apparently. So you really got to figure it out on your own, and that's disheartening to hear, honestly, you know. But also, at least you think to myself, my own personal actions, what would I do different? You know, what would I do if I was them? What would I do if I was me? And I am me. I'm an American. I'm powerful in the world. And I can do a lot. And I say as much as I can.
Yeah.
I do a lot, but it's still not as much as I could. So, yeah, you know, I'm elated that they are figuring out solutions. And I'm hoping that the solutions start coming quicker than the problems.
There's a lot of... like under, I don't want to say underground. There's a lot of underground things.
But there are.
There's a
people
lot of
don't talk about it.
There exactly. There's a lot of underground things. It's called grassroots. You can do.
Mm. It's called grassroots. That's what those are. Grassroots organizations. Sometimes the government will even pretend to be a grassroots organization to trick people. Mm. But there are actual grassroots organizations that are working very hard, and they're the ones who fix the policies.
Now, can you tell if the government is like kind of disguising themselves or not? Like,
I can tell.
How can a regular Joe like me differentiate that?
How can the average Joe differentiate that? That is funny as hell. One example is like with oil, like you'll have like a company who's like, you know, we just want America to stay the way that it's been, and we want to continue to use oil, and we want to continue to use this energy because we have, there's this thing called like a carbon capture, a clean capture, okay, we can put the carbon under the earth, this is good, okay, and we are from the roots, like we are just people, regular people who are just coming together to make this website. I'm going to say no, because what regular people are that invested in oil? So it's just kind of like, it's discernment. It's really up to you to decide. Maybe there is a foolproof way to tell, but for me, I'm just able, I can, it's
like a scam email. 2024, this year, each year we keep breaking our own record. Mm-hmm. So it's been the hottest summer of, I guess, forever. So mm-hmm. we keep breaking our own world records here.
Yeah.
Nice job, guys. My opinion a little bit is, I think maybe this would also kind of contribute to, like, feeling the heat, the lack of trees.
Mm.
My neighborhood has substantially, like, taken away all of my trees.
That's actually really sad.
I'm sad.
Yeah.
Like, some of our, like, neighbors and whatnot can, like, they're like, yeah, actually, I don't want this tree anymore in my yard because there's too many, like, leaves to pick up.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay, well, maybe we don't do
really
that.
That seems really intense for, like,
that's wrong. I'm like, so you're going to just cut it down just because?
Yeah. There are things that are real different for the way that I'm living, from the way that my children will live, that I do have to accept. I can't optimistic my way out of the fact that my children won't experience snow in December. But that's not gonna be our reality in 10 years. So
that's what I'm trying to, like, I'm trying to reverse it.
No, and you can't. It's really about figuring. It's
not.
About,
well,
it's,
I'm not reversing it, but not getting back to normal, because I don't want, like, normal. But
you,
like,
want to restore it. In a lot of documents, it's like, we need to get back to 1990 levels of carbon.
No.
We need to get back to, like, 1970 levels of carbon, and, like, that's the goal. The goal is to restore and to make things feel like as they did before. That's the goal. But again, we have to reshift what it meant to be American. We can't attach to those before values. We have to recreate what it means to be. Period. And I think a big part of experience that we'll experience in the future is experiencing weather. You know, everybody has somebody in Florida, or, you know, knows somebody, a celebrity, a something, you know.
Yeah.
Or California just had some of the worst heat waves ever, like today, like in the Bay Area. Yeah. So it's just about adapting your mind to accept what's going on, because changing it is just, you're gonna have a struggle.
Yes and no. I don't know, maybe I'm just stubborn, but I miss, like, Chicago being, like, that was cold. Like, I think I remember 2 Christmases ago.
Yeah.
I walked outside in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, this is, that's interesting.
You want to think about that, right?
And I do, and I didn't really sink in until, like, I think, like, a couple months ago. And I was like, dude, you walked out in a shorts and a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
On December 25th. But then the weirdest thing is, January comes for Chicagoans, and January is, like, hell.
And that's the thing. I think people think with climate change, oh, like, the winters will be warmer and the summers will be hotter. No, it will be unpredictable as fuck.
Yes.
You just won't know what's going on. We won't be able to, it will be out of our control. It will be out of our hands. So, you know, and it's not about being stubborn, you know, stubborn, good to be stubborn, you know. It's less about being stubborn or not being stubborn. And it's more so about the choice, basically just the choice that we're making. Are we going to choose to wear the shorts outside in the December and then go back inside? Are we going to choose to do that and take a picture and tell everybody, it's hot out here, okay? What are you doing right now to push the change, okay? Or it's hot out here. How can we pressure companies to enact some change? It's hot out here. How can we vote for politicians who will create policies to create some change? You know, we have to go through the processes that we've created, sadly. And this is a good example. This podcast right here, like, the dean of the SES heard this podcast. Maybe you could get into something, and then you could, you know, it leads to something. But climate change is something that, it's not that one person can't change it. The whole world couldn't change it. We are past our goals. Our goals are not being met, and we are not meeting them. And we're not socially changing to meet them. But the more we're able to socially connect in these ways, we can push this change. I keep saying social change because it's not about economics, you know, it's about that social change. Maybe we can boycott something. Like, people are boycotting Apple right now because they have so much stake in the Congo, where they mine precious metals, and it's a genocide in the Congo. So people are boycotting Apple. I'm sure Apple will feel that soon. So, you know, there'll have some environmental changes. It's these little social things.
It's like the Nike thing.
Nike stock is low. It's all these little things that we can do. We do have power collectively.
Yes. And I have a stupid example. I have a really stupid example, but I don't know if you remember the Sonic movie.
I just didn't watch it, but I remember it happening.
Not the actual movie itself, the character design.
Oh, my God. You mean the one that's, like, most recent?
Yeah.
Like it was, like, a 3D thing?
Yeah. Well, basically, everyone bullied the shit out of the creators and said, change this, like, immediately.
Yeah.
I feel like we could do that with, like, actual, real, like controversial, change. Like, yeah.
You're thinking about how to have this be, like, a positive spin, and the positive spin is that we don't know. We don't know if it could be a hurricane tomorrow, if it could be a level 4 storm. We don't know. So it's a lot of it's up in the air, and a lot of it has the ability to be changed.
Speaking of change.
Let's speak of it. Like,
you guys want some actionable insights. Hey. I've got some actionable insights.
Let's talk about it.
On my Linktree, I have the sustainability resources on campus from Loyola University Chicago. And what is in there is a PDF. This is specifically for college students, whoever's living, specifically on campus for Loyola Chicago. Loyola has a PDF within the website, and it's a guide to, like, living green. It's, like, a little PDF on, like, the best, like, I guess, coffee places that are the most sustainable. I think there's one in the world that is the greenest restaurant in the world that is on Devon. There's different ways.
What it's called? You don't have to look it up. We'll talk about it later.
I got you.
We'll talk about it. Look at the list, It's on that PDF.
Guys, right. Look at the list.
Look at that.
And so they have, like, a bunch of other stuff. Like, also, like, there's just, like, sustainability programs. There's a composting, like...
There is. It's here.
Yeah, it is.
My friend started it.
I took a picture of it. I was going to join it.
My friend started it, but she's graduating now, but that was, like, her baby. Her name's Hanan Abdullahi, and if anybody wants to look into her, she actually worked for the EPA. Yeah, the Chicago Environmental Protection Agency. But, yeah, so people are really creating... They're doing some big things here.
Yes, especially here with their sustainability programs.
The School of Sustainability is the only school of sustainability in America that's had a Jesuit education.
Which is impressive.
The only one in the whole, all of America that has a school dedicated to sustainability is at Loyola. Our school runs on, like, the buses run on biofuel that we created and made here at Loyola. The soap you use is bio soap.
Yes,
it's made from oil. Yeah, there's so many different things that we actually do a lot of really crazy things here. There's even, like, a system of power and energy that runs under the school's environment sustainability that keeps everything going. And we have, like, a koi pond. We have a mushroom farm. We go to the farmer's market. Like, it's really honestly sustainable school.
Yes, we also have the farmer's market, that, again, linked on that PDF.
Yes, it's closed now. Last Monday was the last Monday.
I know.
Isn't that so sad?
I'm so sad. I was mad I missed it.
Yeah.
There's also another thing. It's called Think Green and Give.
Tell me about it.
And it's basically a charitable collection event in which, like, clean clothing, household items, basically, like, non-perishable, unopened food, toiletries, all that, are collected at the end of the academic year.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, when students move out, the residents also for the summer, and I think they give it. They somehow repurpose it.
Yeah, we even have the Food Recovery Network, which after every single meal in Damon, students will go and give that food to charitable donations.
Which is very really, beautiful. Like, nice to know, because sometimes if I get something from Damon and I hate it, and I'm like, I'm feeling so guilty I waste this food. You're not wasting the food.
No.
Which is... awesome, actually. It feels really good.
It feels like you did something.
Yes, 100%. It really does. You know what? Because you're still contributing. So that's the thing. It was like, we're still making actionable change, but we're not affecting anybody that much. Because all you're doing is just, it's where you throw it out. No one cares sometimes. Most people don't care about where they put it. I'm sure, I didn't know where it went until you told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that I was just putting it on the trash and just having it go. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yep, the Food Recovery Network, they come and they take that. I think it might only be on the weekends or something, but they take it. They do a bit, and it's obviously more than what went in the trash.
Yes, you know? 100%.
We're doing good. We're doing good because the environment, the students are always putting pressure on the school. We're not doing good because the environmental students are working hard to push and create actionable change. And also the faculty in the school is really new. Before you were here, I think the year I came, it was actually an Institute of Environmental Sustainability. It wasn't its own school yet. Now it's its own school, so it's having all these new things. The things you're listening,
it's beautiful. Yeah,
I'm so glad you're able to reap the benefits of the hard work that, you know, some of my classmates that graduated and me put in. Like, I'm really, really happy to see that you're finding these resources and being like, whoa, like, it's better than I expected. Yeah.
Yes. So those are basically all of, like, your little actionable insights, your little, like, for this episode. There's more. There's going to be more. That is all the time that we have for today. If you want to get more involved in climate advocacy, I highly recommend turning towards Loyola's many sustainability programs. These include Chainlinks, Sustain Loyola Newsletter, and more. These can also be found on my Linktree. Thank you to everybody listening and to everyone who has participated in today's episode. Please subscribe and give me feedback on what you would like to hear about next. And you know what? Who knows? You could even be the next guest here. Stay connected for updates on the next episode on Instagram. My name is Allison Tomas. This is Sustainably Speaking, and I will see you next time.